outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey.
Hey, I was listening to a podcast last week, Kyle, and thought of you.
Okay.
A friend of hers who goes hunting and gets all his hunting garb on, goes out and goes hunting and comes back and he never kills anything. He never gets anything. And she's asking him one time, you never get anything. He said, I'm not trying to. You're not trying to. You put on the camo gear, you put on, you know, you got your gun, you go out in the woods to hunt. And he said, what do you mean? She said, why do you go out there then? And his answer, to behold.
Wow.
And she goes, what? He said, have you ever seen a deer in the wild? His backstory is, young kid, dad took him hunting, killed Bambi's mother in the woods. It so devastated this boy. She said, he'll never kill anything as long as he lives. And he doesn't kill, but he hunts because he wants to behold the beauty of creation. And that led to some interesting discussion on the podcast I was listening to, because they were talking about how we tend to do that with religious stuff, with God stuff. We'll find God in the wild, shoot it, mount it, bring it back, boast about it, publish it, write it. I'm just going, oh my gosh, that's...
That's so good.
It's less God once you mount it. It's less a deer once you mount it. It's less...
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I thought that was such a beautiful observation. How when... And I've been with people like that where something's happening. Oh, this is a great story. I can use this. And you go, oh my gosh, you're ruining it right in front of my face. Just let it be what it is. And the idea of branding it, platforming it, it makes me want to stop doing the podcast. I just go, okay, I'm not looking for God in the wild and drag him onto a podcast anymore. What a great story, though. I would think every reasonable human being in the world would stop hunting after that.
I don't know if that would be quite my conclusion. However, I deeply appreciate where they went with that. I mean, it's funny that you say that, because God and I actually got into that a few months ago. We were up at our Harrison place and I was doing some fly fishing up there and caught this really big, beautiful fish. And I fly fish partially because I love the style of fishing, but I also fly fish because it's catch and release. I'm not hurting them. Like there's no concern in them potentially dying.
Yeah, let me drag you around by your lip all afternoon with a hook and tell me I'm not hurting you.
That's fair.
I threw you back. Okay. So yeah, it's all good now.
That's fair. But I catch this like gorgeous brown trout, and it was just a beautiful day. It was gorgeous to be outside. I catch this beautiful brown trout and I'm just holding him in the water, and I reached to get my phone because I want to post it on my website and, you know, get it out there and whatever. And my phone wasn't in my pocket. And I was like, I started to get angry. And God was like, no, this is just for me and you. That has nothing to do with anybody else and everything to do with you and I delighting in my creation together. And that, like,
cool.
Oof. Yeah.
See, I thought that story was going. I pulled my phone out of my pocket. It slipped out of my hands and it fell in the creek. That's what would happen to me.
No, not quite that bad. I actually forgot my phone, so I didn't even have it on me. But I think that's – how often do we do that, though? That, like, even – like, you and I have even talked about that. Like, we're – like, between our friendship conversations, and then we'll get into, like – oh, should we talk about this, or should we hold it on the podcast, or whatnot? And there's something about delighting in sharing that experience with other people. And then there's those moments where it's like, no, this is just in our friendship, or this is just between God and I, or because even if somebody else was to be let into it, they wouldn't be able to appreciate it and understand the beauty of it.
Well, nothing, unless you're hyping it, nothing is more beautiful in the retelling than the experiencing of it, right?
Yeah.
But telling it to a friend, inviting someone in to share a wonderful story with you, that's a powerful thing. It absolutely is. I think that's very different than I'm mounting it and I'm using it to build my brand. And yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
That's a different thing. Anyway, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
I want to welcome you to this edition of The God Journey. A couple of announcements real quick as we get started. Number one, the RSS feed for calendar year 2022 is now posted at the website, so you can get that there if you want it. Thanks to Joel, who does that for us every year, just out of the goodness of his own soul. for the Jake Colson Club. We did it on this this Saturday, Chapter 7. Great time. We're going to do Chapter 8 in 2 weeks, February. Well, actually, a week from when this airs. So February 4th, nice. The next Jake book, if you want to do that. And the third thing is we're signed up on Pick Cherries. Have you heard of Pick Cherries?
No.
Neither. And it may be a total scam. I don't know. What it allows people to do, if they listen to the podcast on the Pick Cherries app, like you picking cherries and other things, Pick Cherries. If you listen to it on the app, then you hear like up to a 60-second clip. You can take the clip out of the podcast and then send it, post it, do it, you know, just do the whole share thing. So people can actually, if they're really touched by something you or I said, believe it or not, they can pluck that puppy out. So you can find out more at Pick Cherries. And we're on that app. I'll put a link at the bottom of the podcast notes along with the Jake Colson thing and the RSS feed. So on the website, thegodjourney.com, you'll find those things there. So that'll help.
Nice.
So best thing you heard this week, Mr. Kyle?
Ooh, I've got a few of them.
I have so many.
Oh my gosh. I think I'm going to go with the question. I got asked a question this week that was absolutely incredible. And we were talking about just connection, relationship, discipleship. And the question was, if your life was a Wi-Fi network, what would be your password?
Okay.
to access the network. If your life was a Wi-Fi network, what would be the password to access your network? What would yours
Something be? Tells me you have to be under 50 to play this game. Because I hate coming up with passwords. I wouldn't even begin to try and even, what would that be? I don't even know what the premise of it is. So tell me yours.
So I had to think about it for a second. And the password for my Wi-Fi network that I came up with, like just kind of that was on my heart, was, are you hungry? Huh. The conversation kind of moved into a dialogue about, like, for me, I love exploring and talking with people that have an itch or a frustration or a hunger or an inkling or whatever it might be, but there's something in them that is not satisfied, that they know that there's more life out there to be found, that they're not willing to continue to settle for the current space that they're in, that there's something more out there. And I love being in those conversations with people. I thought back to just Jesus's conversation about how, like, I didn't come to be in relationship with people who have it all together and I have it perfect and have it all dialed in. Like, I want to engage with the people that in some regards they know they're effed up a little bit, but they're hungry and they're wanting to explore and they're curious. And I just love that. Like, I love being around people that are like that. And I love having conversations that are with people that are like that. And so it was like, man, if somebody's really going to have access to my Wi-Fi network, I think it would be something along those lines of, are you hungry?
Sarah and I have been reading some of that, going through Matthew these days, about being ready for God's work. And if you're not ready, stuff just blows by you. And Jesus came to help make people ready so that when the revelation insight comes, they can respond to it. So that sense of, and a long discussion yesterday with someone about longing, which kind of gets, I think it's that same thing you're talking about with hunger. Boy, that when you have a longing in your heart that's unfulfilled, sometimes that's a fleshy longing. And I don't even mean an ungodly fleshy longing. I mean, it's just ambition or whatever. And those don't get, but the longing, what I've called before echoes of Eden, or others call signs of Eden, or there's something in my heart that's hungering for a reality I'm not yet experiencing. And that's a good thing. Don't run from that. Explore that one and see where it goes.
Yeah. So that was a fun, and that launched into a whole nother conversation, which I'm sure we might get into one of these days.
The longing.
Yeah.
It's so important, right? If you've got everything you're looking for in life and you've got all your problems sorted, even if they're not sorted, you just got them covered up well. There's not much fellowship that goes on there. I think that's why fellowship is really tough in religious circles when the things they're trying to generate is fellowship. They're really wanting to generate that. But in an environment where everybody has to pretend they have it all together. And so they're competitive as to who's more spiritual, not spiritual. It just doesn't work out well there.
Well, and even tagging back to our conversation last week about discipleship, right? Like, I don't want to have somebody in my life that I'm learning from and bouncing ideas off of and be, you know, in that type of relationship with that has it all together. that to me is one of my first major red flags of, no, I'm good. Thank you.
Once you get near one of those expert people, when you know no one genuinely is an expert, so people are playing with it, then that's not going to be helpful in any way at all.
Yeah.
The best thing I heard this week was from I'm listening to a podcast called Hagar's Voice, and it's about women who have been exploited by people in ministry. And, you know, we always focus on the guy who did the deed and his confession, repentance, restoration. And what they're giving voice to is the person that was exploited, abused, and then re-abused in how the church or religious institution deals with it, all the way from Rabbi Zacharias to all kinds of people. And I got into it because a podcast I was listening to about the Bruxy-Cavey story, a guy I actually met because he wrote the book End of Religion, but he's gotten into a major sex scandal of his own. And like so many other things, it starts off with an apology, I had an affair, whatever. But then it turns out, no, it wasn't just an affair. It was with somebody underage, and all kinds of other things begin to come out. And you go, wow, that's a pretty faked up confession. And they're really saying these things are not going to stop until we give voice to the victims. And interesting thing, but as part of that discussion, this little comment came up that actually fairly long comment, but they were talking about when God invites us into something of his reality, when God shows us something. And it says the knee-jerk impulse is to say, whoa, this is going to cost too much. And it keeps me from just saying, wow, this could be fun or this could be good. That you don't hear anyone on the other side ever go, yeah, it was too much. Shouldn't have paid that. Nobody. Because they're free now and they get it. The trick is you got to go all in for it to work. You have to actually throw yourself on his mercy, where if God doesn't come through on his kind of promises, then I won't be able to obey him. And I need to obey no matter what. And then she said this, I have white-knuckled my way to a compromised version of obedience. It never turns out. I have white-knuckled my way into a compromised version. Who has not done this repeatedly?
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh. It's always worse than my worst fears of what faith would require of me. You cannot logic your way to obedience and try to mitigate the cost. It only works if you throw yourself at the mercy of God's economy. Isn't that a great statement?
Whew.
There's a whole lot there you can unpack for quite a while, but man, that whole idea of you got to go all in because it's so easy to mitigate the obedience down to something I can handle. And then the fruit's never there from what God was hoping to do in it. And I loved also that thought of no one who's ever paid the cost has ever regretted it. I've never heard that either. I've heard people pay an incredible cost to follow God, whether it's been outside the walls of traditional Christianity or something else in their family. And no one ever comes back and says, gosh, yeah, it was too much to pay for what the fruit of that was. You just never hear it. And I often ask that question. Exactly. I'll look at somebody and say, was it worth it? Or do you regret it?
I'm not sure how I feel about you bringing this up right now, honestly.
Okay. I got a letter I can read.
I'm going to see if I can get this out without crying. There's just been there's been some inklings that God has been putting on Jess and I's hearts, and it does it seems out there. And it's like, Lord, there's a cost to that, you know, and what are we saying yes to? What are we saying no to? And I don't know if I mentioned this last week, but I had one of those moments where I got offered a really good job and had a lot of security and a pretty high income salary, blah, blah, blah. And said no to that and have been holding that for the last couple of weeks. And there's just been some inklings that are coming up that might even imply a potential partial relocation to an international location for part of the year. And man, I know that statement is right in the fact of we've got to go all that it's all in and trusting that he's in that and that he's good. Like, I don't want the white knuckled compromise version of the inklings that I feel like he is potentially nudging us into, right? Like I felt like that job opportunity that I turned down, that would have fallen into that category, and that I would have gone into it. And it's not that it would have been a bad thing or whatever. I'm sure I would have been great, but I think the cost, when if I look back on it, the cost would be like, there was a cost to that, and it cost my family, and I don't like that. It cost my family in some really bad ways. I don't know. There's just some rumblings that stir my heart and get me a little emotional. And I'm like, and that's not the first time in the last couple of weeks that these rumblings have been coming up. And then I hear you pull that out, and I'm just like, oh, geez, Lord, like, what are you up to here, Father? And so, yeah, I don't know. And they haven't solidified quite enough to where I'm ready to share them on the God journey publicly yet, but I'm really intrigued just to see where that goes. But I heard the statement the other day, like, I want to be able to look back on my life saying, I can't believe I did that versus I wish I would have done blank. Mm. That was just a really intriguing thought.
Yeah. And I like that the cost you don't want to pay that most people do, God's called them to do some great thing. And so they throw their family and sacrifice them on the altar, right? That's not the kind of cost that God's usually, it's definitely more internal and more at risk of our reputation or at risk of those things is what it usually is. And it's wonderful to realize, okay, if the cost is I've got to sacrifice my family on the altar, this is probably not God. If the cost is, man, it's going to risk me doing what I had in mind for my life or me protecting my reputation or me doing, then that may be the road you want to go down. And
well, again, I hate that you say that because it was so funny because I was, Jess and I were kind of processing this and I was dreaming about it a little bit. And I started coming up in my mind with justifications that I could give to some people around me that would make it better in their minds or quote unquote more acceptable in their minds. And I was like, oh,
so it wouldn't affect how they viewed you. Yeah,
correct. Yeah, exactly. My reputation is about to be at stake here. What people think about me could be altered if we choose to go down this road.
And that's not God saying, I'm going to take you down the hardest road possible because I'll be good for you.
No,
it's just, I think people, we need to be much more aware how much, when Jesus talked about he came to bring a sword, and even between family, even between father and son and daughter and dad. And it wasn't that I like cutting things up. It was when you start to live inside of love and you're doing what God's asking you to do, there's be other people who don't like it. And what we're used to doing with love is manipulating and controlling everybody around us. And when you stop doing it, other people around you haven't stopped doing it. So they're going to be manipulating for all they're worth. And one of the things we read last week in Jesus' instruction to the disciples in Matthew 10, and this is in the message, he said, he talked about people hating you and marginalizing you, talking to the disciples about it. And he said, it's kind of a contradiction, giving so much love, receiving so much hate. Well, that's a statement. Giving so much love and getting back so much hate by people. And that's exactly what it was for Jesus. People were threatened by the way how love led him to live. He was with the wrong people, doing the wrong things, and he upset the wrong crowds. And yes, giving so much love, receiving so much hate, that could be on the epitaph of Jesus, if he had a grave he needed, since he's not in it anymore, he doesn't need a headstone. But that would pretty much say it. He gave so much love and received so much hate. And I know people, because I get these emails a lot from people on this God journey, when you're starting to learn to live loved and live free from the manipulations of others, that doesn't mean those people are going to love you more. Even though you love them more, even though you really feel like, man, they're in a different space in my heart, I'm not going to let them manipulate me, but man, I really care about the darkness they're in or care about whatever, but they're not open to that touch. Then they're going to try and hurt you because they're going to be very jealous and very threatened by the journey you're on.
That honestly leads me into a thought about imposters and the conversation that I got into about imposters.
Imposters.
So the idea is either the things that we create to be able to put out there to the world. So the thing that we allow the world to see and we brand it as us, or the things that we settle for or pursue in the world that are an imposter for a deep longing that's in our heart. I got into this really intriguing conversation this week about imposters, and we're starting to talk about like why do we create them? What is the necessity of an imposter? Like why would I create an imposter and present it to the world? Like why do we do that? Or why, for example, why would we settle for an imposter of love versus authentic love and an authentic expression of love? The conversation was a lot around community and connection. And we were talking a lot about, for example, young people today and why is social media such a draw? Why is it so addicting? Why is it so consuming to a lot of young people in today's world? And we started exploring like, well, have they actually learned and relationally experienced genuine friendship, genuine relationship, authentic connection? And for the vast majority of the people that I work with, the answer would be no. They want connection. The deep longing of their heart is to be in connection and community and relationship with other people. And yet, because it's so unsafe and they don't know how to move into that with other people in a healthy way, they settle for the imposter of social media. It can be a tool for community, but it's a substitute, and I would say a cheap substitute, to genuine, authentic relationship. And yet, as we got into the conversation, the individual asked the question, well, can I be kind to my imposter? So the imposter that I created, can I be kind to them? Man, it launched into this really cool conversation about why, like, for example, I'm not going to ask a young person to step away from social media if they don't have access and the means to do authentic relationship. As they're learning that, like, I'm not going to ask them to take away the imposter if there isn't a substitute for that that's actually going to meet that heart longing. I thought about that in regards to ourselves too, and the imposters that we put out there to the world. And as we're learning to live authentically, as we're learning to live in who God's created us to be, as we're learning to live loved, can we be kind to that imposter that shows up from time to time or takes the on road or that puts themselves out there first? Can I be kind to that imposter, recognizing why that imposter was created, why they were necessary, and that as I'm learning to live loved, that imposter is needed less and less? What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, gee, you just talked for 5 minutes, man. There's so much to unpack there.
I just blasted you with a fire hose. I'm sorry.
You did. I'm like, okay, do I have lots of thoughts? Boy, where to begin? Because you talked about imposter a couple different ways, right? Like, even why do we create this imposters? I don't know that anyone does it volitionally. We don't sit down and say, I think I'm going to put out an imposter version of myself. I mean, some do. If you're a genuine hypocrite, you're trying to, like the one Christian author who told me, I don't really believe this stuff. I'm just writing to a Christian audience. Okay, then you're just an imposter. And I think there's a number of people in Sunday morning pulpits that are often imposters. I'm not living the life I'm talking about here. I just do it on Sunday mornings and go back to my life. But I think for most of us, it's just insecurity leads us to try to put an image out there we think people are going to like and respond to. And maybe social media is the same thing, whether it's being the villain in social media, which some like playing that role, and some like just, I need to be liked, I need to be loved, and I'm trying to find it that way. The whole idea of community being on social media is hilarious because I don't know the people that I'm wanting all these likes from or doing what I'm doing so they'll like my stuff so my brand will grow so I can sell better advertising and make more money. I think the whole idea, if you're going to that for community, that's pretty sad. But I find if you have community with people, and I do with people all over the world, social media is a very enabling thing for community, even not just for me. Yeah. I was talking to a friend yesterday who's stealing all my friendships. I mean, he's with this person. I hear that conversation going on. People are coming in to do workshops for him. I'm just going, dude, you just called through my friendships and picked off the people you really like, which not what happened. But through social media, relationships have grown through comments on things. Yeah. And I know that happens through the God journey where people make comments, other people make comments. And I've seen relationships grow from people who met each other in the comment section of the God journey, found out they lived near each other or whatever. So I think social media can be a great tool for that. But if we're not having community without it, we won't have community with it. And I don't think imposter cells, I know people who are very much trapped in an imposter version of them, but they don't know it. Because knowing you have an imposter is incredibly self-aware in the best possible way. Because if you don't think you do, you're probably not really aware, right?
Yeah.
It's easy to put projections out there. And particularly if you're in ministry as vocation, which I was for 20 years in terms of a pastoral role, almost everything you're on, you're performing, you've got a public persona that may or may not be in sync with who you really are behind the scenes. And I don't mean just abject hypocrisy. I just mean the simplicity of it's easy to be this when I'm paid to be this, when I'm supposed to be this, and then I can't sustain that in the people I live with, family 24/7, because it's an imposter version of me.
So what would you say, like, how have you navigated some of the imposters that have been unveiled in your life? Have you experienced that? Have you walked through that? What does that look like for you? How has God untangled that Christmas light knot?
Yeah, I would like to say I was self-aware enough to recognize an imposter and take it to Jesus and we dealt with it. I think most of my imposters became unraveled and I realized they were after the fact.
Yeah,
like, I didn't know it was an imposter. I thought that's what I was. That's what I was paid to do. I was good at it. And then when you grow in your security and Father's affection for you, it's amazing the things that unravel. Because now I don't need to play for someone's affection anymore. I either have it or I don't. And if I'm being gracious and being generous and being kind, and it comes back to me as accusation and anger, I don't feel like I have to navigate that with people. I just don't. I'll sit down and say, hey, you know what? You seem to be really misguided here. Hope we can find a way around that. But I think the old Wayne would have gone into performance mode and I've got to earn that effect. And people banked on that. People who knew me well back in those days would bank on the fact that Wayne could be manipulated in the same way that I often manipulated people to get what I wanted.
Yeah,
and I would have seen it as my gifts in the gospel, but I wouldn't have seen it as imposter Wayne. So I would say my stuff has untangled. I look back going, oh, crud, I can't believe I lived that way. I can't.
Yeah.
But I couldn't see it when I was there. I saw it when God untangled it. So I've never had the experience of, okay, I've got this imposter self and I'm going to take it. And Jesus, how do we deal with this? It's never happened.
I love that description because I would say in a lot of regards, that has been, I would say, a similar experience that I've had with Father. For me, I was a master, and still have to stay alert about this, was a master chameleon because of the stuff that I went through and because of my giftings to be able to read a room, be able to see people's values, and then to be able to adapt.
And incorporate those values. Yeah, I can crawl into that.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
And you can do it without even thinking. It's not like that's a volitional, conscious, oh, I got to recognize what's going on here. I got to try. It just happens because of our insecurity and our desire to be loved, even if it's false love. Because if I've gotten someone to fall in love with an image of me, that's still not me.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's left. They say in ministry, I heard this all the time when I was pastoring, the most depressive day among ministers is Monday morning. After putting all their stuff out there in a pulpit, sharing their heart, whatever, now they're left with themselves alone on Monday, wondering how it was received, how it was taken, their job at risk. And it's true. I mean, I've talked to many pastors that found Monday. That's why many of them took it as a day off, because they couldn't do any ministry that day anyway. They were still fresh from the wounds of the day before.
Wow.
And I think it's part of that insecurity. The idea of ministry often draws, just like psychology draws an awful lot of people who've had psychological problems. You know, it just does. And ministry is an invitation for people who are insecure about their own relational journey with Christ. And so they get into ministry as the way to kind of curry God's favor. And it's the insecurity that drives it, which is then the cord the enemy gets to pull later, whether it's in sexual exploitation of people or whatever, or just authority issues and controlling. I mean, because if the insecurity doesn't get met, it will become the basis of the ministry, of the person.
Yeah.
Whether it's the expert thing or the, oh gosh, there's so many sad ways to go there. And many of them, I was down without even knowing it until God pulls me aside and says, I've got something better to show you if you follow me instead of hold on to this. And that was one of those lay it all down moments. I could have white knuckled my way into some form of, you know, faked obedience to that. But it was the fully laying it down and just crawling on the altar that I had no idea at the time all it would dismantle and change in my life. And I have so treasured that. I have other people who look at those moments saying that's where Wayne's life went awry. He jumped out of the club and should have done this. And now, and so what some use as an accusation, and that doesn't even bother me anymore. Go ahead. Yeah. I have lived the fruit of this life. I am still living the fruit of this life. And if you want to be part of that with me, come on, let's go. Let's enjoy Jesus. If you want to stand on the sidelines and hurl rocks at me, go ahead. I'm not going to throw them back. I'm just going to move further away because your aim's not that good.
Well, and it's interesting because for me, my imposter self was much more inclined to throwing rocks because it needed to, right? Like it needed to protect itself. It needed to defend itself. Yeah. It needed to be justified. Sure. And as that starts to untangle, and as I learn to live more in who God created me to be and enjoy that as I'm learning to be loved by him and walking that out, doesn't mean that it doesn't hurt at times, but there's less of a need to throw a stone back or to defend or to protect or to, like, so we started off this whole thing with a fishing story. And it just makes me think of, I don't know if you probably saw it or not, but there was these two guys that were nationally ranked fishermen. They had won huge competitions.
Yeah, no, I didn't see this.
So they'd won all this stuff, like tons of money, boats, sponsorships, all this stuff. Well, on live national television at this competition, it's found out that they were putting weights inside the fish.
Oh my gosh.
To try to be able to win the competitions. And they're just standing there as it's being unveiled that this is their imposter, right? Like their imposter is all of a sudden getting unveiled. And people are literally just screaming at them because some of these people that are a part of this, like they literally had these guys take thousands of dollars in sponsorships from them, had threatened their livelihood. And now all of a sudden they're finding this out. And I remember watching that and my stomach just sinking and being like, oh my gosh, like I can't even fathom what they're going through. And yet now, like I think about too, a lot of the people that have been in very, very public ministry stuff and they have these things, this imposter gets unveiled and everything starts to crumble. And yet, do you think there's an invitation there?
What kind of invitation?
An invitation into something different, like into a different life or to get rid of the imposter when something like that happens.
Yeah, I think everything exposed in our life is an invitation, right? We've talked about Jesus poking holes in our illusions. Yeah. That's that moment.
Yeah.
And are you going to be all in, which the quote I read earlier, that's the opportunity, right? The opportunity is to go, oh my gosh, I've been exposed. I'm going to just lay my life at the foot of Jesus and see however this sorts out, I'm going to go with it rather than, nope, I'm going to defend myself. I'm going to redouble my imposter efforts. Because I wonder what the guys you were talking about, the fishing guys who are cheaters, I would really be interested to know, did they start that way? Has it always been that they've cheated or were they really good for a while or really lucky and then trying to maintain the reputation? Because I think that's a lot of these. I met Bruxy Cavey years ago. I did an interview for him for the podcast and I was in Ontario. He was there. I loved his book. But I was sitting when I was interviewing him in his quote unquote church, which I don't like the term for that. But in the religious building they met in, the religious rain shelter, as my Australian friend Kevin Smith would have called it. I just go, there's a real disconnect between what he wrote about and what I'm seeing around me and the deference of people around him watching this. I'm going, it's weird. But then the question is, was he always that way, hiding it in ministry? Or did being on a stage produce the fear and the need to promote something or hide something? Where does the imposter self come from? Because you can create him any day you want. You're not born with him necessarily. And I think that's what God warned us about when he told Israel, I don't want you to have a king because kings will exploit your daughters and they will take your sons to war. And then you have David, a man after God's own heart, who does despicable things.
Who did literally that.
And they called him in this podcast, the patron saint of sexual abusers is David. Because David did it. He was a man after God's own heart. Well, he was less a man. I think what the teaching of David's life is not, you can be of a great heart for God and make a mistake with Bathsheba. That's not the, what it's saying. What it's saying is you can have a great heart for God. And when you take on management roles for people, it will corrupt you. Even a heart that is fully given to God can be corrupted at that end of things. And I just think that's why there's the constant choice of people who follow God, especially people who follow God in a spotlight that somehow is their livelihood or somehow is their public reputation or whatever. There's a tendency, I think, to once I can't scale it up on my own, I've got to make it up and fake it up. The nature of human leadership is corruption, whether it's sexual corruption, whether it's excess corruption, just the excess. We see it all the time when somebody, quote unquote, is successful in ministry. And I heard somebody say today, I thought this was great. Being successful in ministry and successful in Christ's mission is not the same thing. Well, that's the truth. Oh my gosh, that's so true. Because it always leads, whatever somebody climbs a ladder, it always leads to excess. Indulgence, excess, exploitation of other people. If you don't keep your heart pure, those trappings will make you an imposter because you're getting paid to project an image. But the image you can no longer sustain because at these points of choice, you're talking exposure, points of choice. Do I go this way now and bear my soul on the altar? I mean, that part of what I felt when Sarah was gone when I got home last year was, do I fake this up and just, you know, I can make her the villain and make me the victim and, you know, fake it all up. But me, it was just, you know what, God, I don't know how much of this letter from Sarah is true, how much is not true, whether I've lived a life for 46 years or I haven't, I have no idea, but this is a great time to find out. And same thing when I followed God outside the fellowship of the last church I was employed at was the same thing. It was like, God, I could be wrong. I could be the selfish rebellion person everybody says I am, not everybody, but those people were saying I was. Yes. And you know what? I'm going to take this opportunity to find out. God, if I am that, shout it from the rooftops.
Yeah.
Because I don't want my relationship with Jesus to be inauthentic. I don't want to get to the end of the age and went, you know what? I kind of faked that really well. I know other people, I know I could do exactly what I'm doing and fake it up and no one would ever know. I know that. But for my own self, I have sought to live as authentic a life as I can live.
Yeah.
I want to be kind and generous to people that were on the other side of that in a variety of ways for me. But at the same time, I'm not going to give up my authenticity, even to meet the protocols of being nice to other people who are deceptive and dishonest. I don't know how to do that.
Do you think that God's best way through for David was to be a king?
No. I think scripture is clear. He says, I don't want you to have a king. If you want to have one, though, I'm going to choose, handpick two, Saul first, David second. I'm going to handpick two, and it's going to destroy them. Solomon begins kind of, same thing happens to Solomon, right? And after that, it's a long time till you have a good king of any measure. And you could argue whether Solomon was one. He was very much corrupted by the excesses of, I'm the big boss in charge and I'm really wise. And man, I'm just going to use it for all my own joys and 300 wives and 1,000 concubines or something. Excess, corruption, I think it's all part of inside that imposter self. And to know oneself as we truly are is a gift of God. Examine me, O God. Search my heart and see if there's any deceitful way in me. Most things David prayed. But David's his kingship was best before Bathsheba and never recovered after. The division in his own family, the hurts, the stuff he went through, it wasn't the same. He wasn't allowed to build the temple. He just said, I just want to be a gatekeeper at the house of God. Well, he didn't get to do that. He was king. And that king was going to rot him out. And that's what God, and we still have not learned that lesson because even the podcast I'm listening to is, we just need better people in leadership. And it's like, you don't realize the very weight of management leadership corrupts the human soul in a way that few people can deny.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying all who lead are bad. I'm just saying there's a whole lot of corruption that happens for the vast majority of people who get in those places. Even David, with a heart after God, was willing to rape and murder for his own amusement. And, oh gosh, and just the indulgence of, I'm sending my people off to war, but I'm not going. I'm staying home, laying around on the couch, being bored, and then I've got to amuse myself. And, oh, she looks nice. I'll invite her over to the castle, and I'll murder her husband. I mean, just, David was a wretch in the end. Now, did God still love him? Yes, God loves him. God chose him. God knew that the price of putting that assignment on David would be David's corruption. Somehow God knew that. That's what the warning was. That's why I don't want you to have a, I don't want you to be like the other nations. Well, look at what our quote unquote our churches. They're just like every other business, military establishment, that same CEO, head authority structure. Person who gets paid at the top, gets paid more, worshiped more, elevated more. Everybody just, oh, I love him. He's such an amazing, humble man. All the same stuff. And yet it corrupts them to the core. And I've seen it. I've been at this now 47 years. I've seen it happen over and over again to people I love, people I respected, who get to their later years in life. And I think it is this. They come to these moments where God's saying, this way.
Yeah.
And if you can't lay it on the altar, if you can't go, just the fact that you were faithful to God for 50, 60 years of your life doesn't mean you'll be faithful to God at the end. It doesn't mean it. It means you'll be trapped by fear and deception and delusion and manipulated by people around you. And now you're fighting the very kingdom you gave your life for. And I've got stories like that too, that are heartbreaking. But I've also got stories of men and women who have lived this journey into their 80s and 90s, still following God with a whole heart, gentle, kind, honest, authentic, real, wonderful, kind people. So I think we were going to talk about something else today, but since we got on the imposter cell, I just, man, if you know you've got them, ask Jesus to deal with them because they will own you eventually.
Yeah.
And if you don't know you have them, that prayer of David's is a powerful prayer. Search me, O God, and know my heart. And I say, search me, O God, and tell me, please, show me. Because I think what the cross did, if it did anything, was made that I could see the full weight of my brokenness and run to God knowing he's my only hope to deal with it.
Yeah.
I don't have to hide from seeing what's real here in my own heart. Because I have a God who knows it already and loves me anyway. So we're going to get through it together. But if I don't see it and don't run from it, it will own me.
Yeah.
And I don't think we know when that happens. We don't have good friends around us. And if we don't, I mean, it can be easily go down an imposter road with that white knuckled self-justification that makes it look like obedience when it's not.
That white knuckled compromise, it can look very spiritual. Even the conversation about having those good friendships, that good relationship, that good community, because that's, again, another thing that so often takes the people out that are at the top, you know, that seductive allure of power that it's lonely. Like the power structure, whether it be a CEO or the head pastor of a church, there aren't those people in their life. There isn't those relationships, that community where somebody can say, hey, what are your thoughts on this? And they can give you honest live feedback.
And isn't part of that temptation is if I admit to a weakness, that's going to ruin my authority because my authority is built on illusion. I mean, one time at the end of Bush's presidency, I think this is George W. Bush. He was at that end of his first term. Do you have any regrets or anything you wish you'd done differently the first term? Nope, none at all. Okay, there's a dangerous dude right there.
Yeah.
If you don't have regrets, I've got regrets from the past year. I got things I wish I'd done differently. If I knew what I knew today, I would have responded differently. And that keeps me growing and saying, okay, God, so search my heart because I want to live inside. Because when you're inside God's reality, it is really, really sweet. Mm-hmm. And when you're living, even when it's tough, it's sweet. When you're living in your own reality, trying to get God to do what you think is best, that would serve you well, serve your mission well, serve your whatever well, it never goes well. And no one who pays the price ever regrets that they did.
Well, that's what I love about this too, is like some of the things that when God has unveiled those imposter elements in me, there's also been a recognition of like, God, I can't fix that on my own. Like when I was younger and earlier on this road, it was just like, okay, I'm going to go out and I'm going to try to fix it. I'm going to try to heal myself, you know, all this stuff. And God, thank you for showing that to me. You're going to have to keep untangling this because I have no idea. Like, I know that I am not capable of unraveling that in my life.
You can spend your life trying to untangle yourself, or you can find yourself inside Jesus and let him untangle. And he'll do it just by leading you through things that all of a sudden stuff got entangled. And I don't even know how it happened, but I can see the difference.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.